And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 190. That's right. We are approaching getting into that top 10 before 200. I'm so excited. Hey, folks, this is Black and a Half, and my name is Silas Lindenstein. I'm your host today. Samantha is on assignment. I got a fun episode for you today. It's a little bit of a mix. I've got Black and a Half reviews. I'm reviewing two films, as well as I'm going to give you my top 10 list for Christmas movies. So these are 10 favorites, 10 that I am checking out. Some are newer films, some are older films. I think it's a good mix, but they're films that I recommend you watching for this Christmas season. And then I'm going to get the two reviews I have today. One is opening this weekend on Christmas. It is The Tragedy of Macbeth, starring Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand, as well as a new film opened last week on Netflix. It's an Italian film called The Hand of God. Very excited to talk about both of those films. Thank you so much. I want to wish you and your family happy holidays, whatever you celebrate this time of year. Maybe it's over and everyone else is still celebrating. I don't know. But hey, whatever it is you celebrate, I hope you had a wonderful one. I hope you have a good one. And thank you for tuning in year after year to Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Folks, I want to make a big shout out and happy holidays to our Patreon supporters. If you too would like to help support this program for as little as $1 a month, you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And, you can become a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners for just $1 a month. And, or you can up that a little and become an Inner Circle member like Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. Join them, find out what it's like to be part of the Inner Circle. And of course, for this holiday season, you can make it a great one for me by going to Apple Podcasts and giving a 5-star review. Leave a comment. It helps a lot. And I think that's it. Oh, also, feel free. You know, maybe you're looking for some changes in next year. Maybe you're like, you know what? This is the year I get into a house. Well, you want to know how to do that. So check out the sister podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. You can check that out on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's a step-by-step process on how to buy a home, especially geared to first-time home buyers or those who've maybe been out of the market for a while and need to know what's going on, how things are done. Maybe you're in a different state. And of course, if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, that is my day job. When I'm not watching movies, I'm helping people buy and sell homes. So check me out if you're anywhere in the Seattle, Tacoma area. Email me, silas@silasgetsreal.com or silas@blackandahalf. Maybe I should use that one for this program. That would make more sense, I guess. But that's that other podcast, and this is this one. So right now, I want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 190, the top 10 Christmas movies.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
The top 10 Christmas movies. Now, I'm not going to say this is the definitive list or anything. There's so many movies that come out each year. There's so many I haven't seen. Some I've looked on lists and I'm like, I don't even remember that film. I know I watched it, but so could it be really a favorite if I couldn't even remember it? I don't know. Maybe I was going through a breakup at the time. Who knows? But you know what? If you have a suggestion for a Christmas movie that I miss on this list, go ahead and message me. Say, Sash, you missed out on this one. Message me at my personal Facebook or email me. The Black and a Half Facebook page was taken over by Vietnamese. I'm not joking. It's only in Vietnam right now. Like, unless you already liked it, I think you can't find it. So I'm trying to figure out how to regain control of that. So we'll see. Life's an adventure right now, let me tell you. So anyway, here's my top 10 list. I'm going to start off at number 10, work my way up, okay? Number 10, Love Actually, which is a 2003 film rated R, 2 hours and 15 minutes. I think everyone probably knows the movie, but if not, here, this follows the lives of 8 very different couples and dealing with their love lives in various loosely interrelated tales, all set during a frantic month before Christmas in London, England. Now, there's some controversy of this film because some of it, in hindsight, you know, after look, it's one of those things, you know, like romantic comedies, sometimes there's a fine line between, oh, that's adorable, and oh, he's a stalker. There can see be some elements, not necessarily of that, but of like, oh, that seems so sweet, but oh, if you think about it, that's not a good thing to do. But it's still a good movie. It takes place at Christmas. I definitely have some bias here because it was my wife's. It was one of her favorite Christmas movies for sure. And even there's a scene from it that I reenacted for a wedding proposal when I made up that there was a Love Actually 2 coming out, and I made a little trailer that was my proposal. So I have a bias on this for sure, but I do put it down on 10 because it's not like it's just there. It just made the cut still. Okay. So yeah. Number 9. Home Alone, the film that introduced us to Macaulay Culkin. 1990 film, PG, 1 hour and 43 minutes. An 8-year-old troublemaker must protect his house from a pair of burglars when he is accidentally left home alone by his family during Christmas vacation. It's full of slapstick comedy. I forget if I took my brother to see this one. Either this or Home Alone 2. I took him to see one of them in the theater, and he laughed his little, like, kindergarten butt off, right? He thought it was so funny. Yeah, back 90, it must have been Home Alone 2 or something, because I'm thinking of the time of year. I would have had to been out there, moved. I wouldn't have moved out yet to California, so. But Home Alone 1, I think the original one is better. And, I mean, we all know it. A lot of slapstick. Joe Pesci in a wonderful comedic role that we don't get to. I don't know. I don't feel like he doesn't do roles like that much. And it was a great shining moment for him. But I think, yeah, number 9. Okay. Let's see. Number 8. This is a relatively newer film, Klaus. It's a 2019 animated film. It's rated PG, 1 hour and 36 minutes. There are two descriptions I want to read of it. One says, a simple act of kindness always sparks another, even in a frozen, faraway place. Oh, wow, that's a whole summary. I'm not reading that. How about this? After proving himself to be the worst student at the academy, a postman is sent to a frozen town in the north where he discovers a reclusive toy maker named Klaus. That's right. You know what? It's got a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Metacritic only 65%, but it was a big fan hit. I believe it is a YouTube exclusive. It's on YouTube. It is directed by Sergio Pablos. Yeah, distributed by Netflix. It's an English language Spanish animated Christmas film. So it's sort of like a little origin story of Santa Claus. And I really, really kind of love that. That's interesting. Yeah, that it was made in Spain, but it was in English. $40 million budget, though. Man. It was nominated for at the 92nd Academy Awards for Best Animated Feature. Making it the first animated film from Netflix to be nominated for an Academy Award. Interesting. So, yeah, and it's a great little story about a postman who meets a toy maker and says, hey, maybe if we team up, we could deliver some of these old toys and create something. And boy, don't they. Yeah, so check it out. Klaus. It's streaming on Netflix. Number 7. Scrooged. The classic remake of A Christmas Carol. Modern update. 1988 fantasy comedy. So definitely comedy, PG-13, 1 hour, 41 minutes. In this modern take on Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, Frank Cross, played by Bill Murray, is a wildly successful television executive whose cold ambition and curmudgeonly nature has driven away the love of his life, Claire Phillips, played by Karen Allen. But after firing a staff member, Elliot Loudermilk, Bobcat Goldthwait, on Christmas Eve, Frank is visited by a series of ghosts who give him a chance to reevaluate his actions and right the wrongs of his past. Directed by Richard Donner. Location, New York City. But it's a delightfully funny film. I think it's one of the better adaptations of A Christmas Carol. And if you have not seen it, I highly recommend it. And right with that, I'm going to put it at number 6 here, A Christmas Carol. But this version, my favorite version, is 1984, George C. Scott version. It's 1 hour, 40 minutes. It's rated PG. We all know the story. The unscrupulous businessman Scrooge doesn't think much of Christian charity. But then the ghost of his deceased business partner appears to him, trying to get him to change his mind. Scrooge should learn to open his heart. Directed by Clive Donner. I think it's the definitive Christmas Carol. I'm some surprising actors in this. Roger Reese is in it. I always forget about that. For me, it's a definitive performance. I think George C. Scott is just amazing as Scrooge, and it used to be when I was alone. It's a dark film, it's not for kids. So there's some scariness to it. And it can be a little slower for kids. There's so many more newer versions that are more lighthearted with it. It used to be one that I would watch by myself before kids, like the week of Christmas. I'll watch that. Maybe I'll sneak that in again this year. But that is my definitive Christmas Carol, and so it's the only one on my list of the pure one. Number 5, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Chevy Chase, starring, of course, PG-13, 1989, comedy slapstick, 1 hour and 37 minutes. As the holidays approach, Clark Griswold wants to have a perfect family Christmas, so he pesters his wife, Ellen, and his children as he tries to make sure everything is in line, including the tree and house decorations. However, things go awry quickly when his hick cousin Eddie, played by Randy Quaid, and his family show up unplanned and start living in their camper on the Griswold's property. Even worse, Clark's employers renege on the holiday bonus he needs. Directed by Jeremiah Chechik. So it follows the Griswold family, and we know the series of vacation movies, and this is the Christmas one. And it is a film that, while a Christmas movie, it is definitely one that I can watch all year. I tune this on, put it on occasionally. It is the remote stopper in my house. When it comes on, I definitely stop and put it down. But I put down the remote and I'm like, oh, let's see this. Because it's also, it's friendly enough that almost anybody can watch it. So got a full complement of littles. They can still watch it and enjoy it. So many memorable scenes with the sled of doom, as I call it. Getting the Christmas tree, the family dinner. It's all just. I just think it's so good, and I'm shocked. It only has a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. I feel like somebody must have hated Chevy Chase or something and went on there, because I thought this was a beloved classic. So I don't know. Maybe people are tired of the lights, the Griswold house lights comparisons. Number four, A Christmas Story. Rated PG, 1983, family comedy, runtime 1 hour and 34 minutes. I believe some station plays this for 24 hours from Christmas Eve to, I don't know if they still do that anymore. Anyway, based on the humorous writings of author Gene Shepard, this beloved holiday movie follows the wintry exploits of youngster Ralphie Parker, played by Peter Billingsley, who spends most of his time dodging a bully and dreaming of his ideal Christmas present, a Red Ryder air rifle. Frequently at odds with his cranky dad, but comforted by his doting mother, Ralphie struggles to make it to Christmas Day with his glasses and his hopes intact. Directed by Bob Clark. Adapted from In God We Trust. All others pay cash. It received the award for a Canadian Screen Award for Best Screenplay. That's a little known fact for you. It's the classic. Everyone knows it. You'll poke your eye out. The woe heard around the world. There's so many classic scenes in it, from the sticking the tongue on the ice pole outside to the Santa Claus kicking Ralphie in the face. Down to the bundled up kid, his brother, who can't move his arms because he's most bundled up so much in the cold weather. Just such a classic, wonderful, wonderful film. It feels cheesy to have it on, but that's me. Number three. I feel like the top three are going to be a shock here, okay? They're gonna shock you. The top three here. A little bit surprising. But number three, It's a Wonderful Life. PG, 1946, drama fantasy, 2 hours and 10 minutes. George Bailey has so many problems he's thinking about ending it all, and it's Christmas. As the angels discuss George, we see his life in flashbacks. As George is about to jump from a bridge, he ends up rescuing his guardian angel, Clarence, who then shows George what his town would have looked like if he hadn't been for all his good deeds over the years. Directed by Frank Capra, adapted from The Greatest Gift. It is such a heartwarming film to me. It's a black and white film, and, you know, like, I think when I was a kid, I was always like, what is that, black and white? Ooh, ooh. And it wasn't until I was a full-grown adult I actually watched it. And it has one of my favorite acting scenes ever is George and his wife at the phone, his future wife, as he's trying to convince to get into plastics, and he's staring to the girl Mary, who he's kind of destined for, right? The staring into their eyes, and there's so much acting that happens between them, and we know what's going on, and we know the struggle he's having, and the dialogue that's happening behind it has nothing to do with it. And it's just one of the most, the finest acted scenes, I think, in any Christmas movie. And yeah, for that, it gets number three in my books. Now, a lot of rankings have this as number one, right? A lot of people say this is the number one Christmas movie. It's number three. I actually got, so it's hard to believe that there's two more that I put ahead of this. My number two film. It's a Netflix original, it's only on Netflix. Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey. Rated PG, came out in 2020. One of the only good things of 2020. Musical family, 2 hours and 2 minutes. Decades after being betrayed by his apprentice, a once joyful toy maker finds new hope when his bright young granddaughter arrives on his doorsteps. Directed by David E. Talbert. Starts Forrest Whitaker, Keegan-Michael Key, Madeline Mills, and Felicia Rashad is in this. It is such a delightful film. It is a all or nearly all black cast. All the major roles are black. There is a major character that is played by Ricky Martin, voiced by Ricky Martin. But it's a musical. It's a black musical, and it's a Christmas film, and it was so delightful. I'm going to rewatch this Christmas Eve with my family, I believe. It's new music. It's new styles. It's something that I feel like I just want you to trust me on this. It is such a good musical. Even if you're not that into musicals, just watch this. Forrest Whitaker in a role I've never seen him do before. It's just delightful to watch. And so do it. You'll never expect to see him singing and dancing like he does in this film. And having snowball fights, like, that's usually he's really angry or upset about things. But he is in this, you know, to a degree, but the joy in him, he's such a magnificent actor. And I think this really shows. And, it does have an 89%, on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is pretty good. I don't know if that's certified fresh, but, 89%. It's great. Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey. And now for my number one. I'm surprised how many people don't know about the film. But whenever I bring it up, people do. They're like, that is so good. The Ref. It's rated R, 1994, a comedy / dark comedy, 1 hour and 37 minutes, starring Dennis Leary, Judy Davis, Kevin Spacey. I know you got mixed feelings about that, but let's look past that for a second. Let's not blame the rest of the wonderful cast and the hundreds of people involved in the film. Make it happen. I'm not erasing the film just because of what the scumbag did. Okay. Directed by Ted Demme or Demme. I'm not sure. Bickering spouses annoy the cat burglar who take them hostage in their Connecticut home. That's the description. It takes place on Christmas. It does. It's not like that. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? No, this is definitely a Christmas movie. It's about there's a family gathering on Christmas. They're going to, they have a holiday Christmas dinner is the plan for the evening. Son is coming home for Christmas. It is a story of, there's an element that it is a story of redemption and hope and, I don't know, and fighting back and standing up to tyrants. And it's dysfunctional. It's a dysfunctional family finding a way to make themselves functional, right? It is such a funny film, and it doesn't have the best Rotten Tomatoes score. I'm actually I'm surprised by that because every time I meet people and talk about it, it's 72 on Rotten Tomatoes. But every time I meet people about and talk about the film, people are like, I love it. And the only thing they have bad to say about it is now Kevin Spacey. So that's only the last like few years. Otherwise, people were always, it was always a delightful find. I just think it never got enough show when it initially came out. It never got enough play. I discovered it accidentally years and years ago. And then I've just been in love with it since then. And it's my number one Christmas film. So, and I bet it's the, I guarantee I'm probably the only person that puts The Ref as number one on this. And I like Christmas lists when I at least see it show up. Then I'm like, okay, they actually did their research. So that is my Silas Lindenstein top 10 Christmas films. Now, on to the reviews. Two films to review this week. First one up, we're going to do The Tragedy of Macbeth. It's funny. The 2021 film is adapted, written and directed. It's adapted by Joel Coen, based on Macbeth by William Shakespeare, The Tragedy of Macbeth. This thing calls it a thriller. I'm like, what? It is the first film directed by one of the Coen brothers without the other's involvement, which is amazing. The film stars Denzel Washington, Frances McDormand, Betty Carvel, Alex Hassel, Corey Hawkins, Harry Melly, and Brendan Gleeson. Frances McDormand was also a producer of the film. That's fascinating to me. Look, I've directed Macbeth before. I've directed a stage version of it in a high school, granted. So, but the point is, I'm very familiar with the script. I've heard it so many times, and then having also seen productions, I was done with the story. I'm like, I don't need to see Macbeth again. I'm not gonna watch it. I won't watch a film of it. I have no interest until I saw the trailer for this. Until I saw Denzel and Frances McDormand, like, that's what? I was like, oh, okay. I will check this out. And I was not disappointed. It's black and white. It's also, I believe it's shot in like, it's like shot in like TV size, like the 4 3/4, whatever. It's a box. It's like a square. I don't know. Definitely a choice. And interestingly enough, they wanted to give it an untethered from reality look, and so it was shot entirely on sound stages. And you know, you can tell. It's going to be streaming on Apple TV Plus. Just doing a little theatrical run this weekend, probably to be eligible for awards and such. And then, yeah, I mean, that's it. It's got this, here's one thing, another thing I really loved about it. It was just like bare minimum. There's not a prop for set dressing. There's not a prop in it unless it's used, right? It's that minimal. It's very minimalistic. It's stark. Like when you do a play, like, you know, there's the rule, like, okay, if you pick up an apple in act one, it better be eaten in act five. It's actually a gun, but the point is, like, if something is visible, it's important to it. And so there's nothing on the set that isn't important to it. There's no like dressing. They do this thing with the sisters. The weird sisters are played by the same actor. Sometimes in a way that seems to be that it's a multiple personality thing, and sometimes there's definitely distinct people. So that's like the one, I guess, twist on it. They cut a lot out of this. They strip down the script to the bare minimum of the story. Nothing is really lost in there, and we still get the classic monologues. But it is stripped down to fit in this time, because otherwise it would never fit. And Denzel, man, you put him in any script where language is the most important element of it, and it's amazing. He's so subtle, he's so nuanced, he's flawed. And what the interesting part about Macbeth, I think, is that you have to make the character really likable because he does such unlikable things. And because he's not like he's an anti-hero. He's definitely not a hero of it. He falls into fate and falls into ambition. But we follow him through it, right? He's not a hero at all. And if there is a bad guy, it's Lady Macbeth, right? Who's driven. But it's not classic where there's like a bad guy versus a good guy, that's what's fascinating about it. Frances McDormand is incredible as Lady Macbeth. She's like, you'd be like, this is the film you've just waited to do this, haven't you? Like, she dug into it. It's unsettling. The film is the way they do shoot that in the soundstage. It's almost unsettling to watch. Which is exciting. Like, there is no reason to do another Macbeth where it's a fully produced, a completely, that's been done, right? Realism, where realism's there. There's no reason to do it unless you get some good actors together, right? I guess that's a decent reason. But these things are done so often. Like, you got to do something special with it. And I would say that this Macbeth is special. It's exciting to watch, and it puts the focus where it should be in a play, in a script like Macbeth. It puts the focus on the actors, and that's what you're watching it for. You're watching it for the great acting. You're watching it for the writing, and to listen to it, to hear how they interpret each line, I guess. But yeah, if you are a fan of Shakespeare, I think you will really enjoy this take on it. It's at least worthy of discussion. Okay, at very least. So check it out. Opening Christmas weekend. Nothing says Merry Christmas like killing the king to hopefully seize power, right? I don't know. That's kind of a funny weekend for it. But yeah, check it out. I think you'll be very pleased by it. Oh, and of course, my 3L system. As you know, I do 3Ls here. I either love it, I like it, or I lose it. Love It is the film you got to tell people they got to check out right away. From you get out of the movie theater or you're done streaming it, and you text people, you post on Facebook, you call, you do whatever, you say you got to see this film. Like It, you like the film. You put down the remote if you see it's on. You enjoy it thoroughly. It doesn't even have to be a good film to like it sometimes. And then Lose It is that one that I watched it so you don't have to. Okay, so just don't stay away from that. I am gonna give Tragedy Macbeth a love it. I love the way they dealt with that. I mean, when I left it, I liked it. By the time I went to sit down to compose thoughts on it, I loved it. So it grows on you. And for a play that for one that I'm so familiar with, I'm kind of surprised by that. Anyway, next up, we got The Hand of God. This is a 2021 Italian drama written, directed, and produced by Paolo Sorrentino. It stars Filippo Scotti, Tony Servillo, Teresa Saponangelo, and a bunch of other folks. No, they're Italian actors. Nobody listening to this probably knows who they are. So I'll save us all that. And it's subtitled. Subtitled in English. I didn't watch. I believe it's dubbed as well if you want, but I don't like watching dubbed films that much. Well, at least there's certain languages. And for some reason, Italian, I don't like seeing dubbing on Italian. It bothers me. This is a coming to age story taking place in the 1980s, which, by the way, I've been noticing that a lot. It's like when I was growing up, all the movies that's officially where I'm old, because the coming of age stories are now take place when I was growing up, instead of like 60s or 50s. All these coming of age stories are now in the 80s, and I relate to them. And like, I was already born when your coming of age story is happening. Anyway, it's already been selected as an Italian entry for the Best International Film of the Academy Awards. So you're probably going to be hearing this a lot. It's streaming on Netflix, exclusively here in the US, I believe. The plot on it. In the 1980s, young Fabiato lives at home in Naples with his father, Saverio Schizza, and mother, Maria Schizza. He doesn't have many friends or a lover and wants to study philosophy in college. For the time being, he's mainly listening to music and watching Diego Maradona playing for his home team. Napoli. His brother, Marcino, takes him to an acting audition and sympathizes with his affection for their emotional, troubled aunt, Patrizia. Then tragedy strikes the Schizza family, and Fabietto's comes of age in a cruel and brutal manner. So here's what surprised me about the film. I laughed a lot, and sometimes senses of humor don't translate super well in films, the cultural senses of humor. But the comedy of this film was a lot about based sort of out of love, out of family love. These people bite at each other like the family members, like they snap at each other a little, not snap, but like snip. A snip, which reminds me of like culturally a lot of my families of color. There's a little like stings at each other, which is great. Maybe it's an Italian thing too. That's why, you know, part Italian. So I connect with it. It's a very funny film. And it's very much focuses on the love of this family and the in and outs of this family. And you got one person who's a little out there, who they is aunt by marriage, which is important to know in this. Aunt by marriage, she's not blood related. So guy's a little crush on his aunt there. But it's the focus of the love on the family, and that always translates, right? And his love of soccer. That's one thing that appealed to me as a big soccer fan. I wanted to see like what this was about, because I heard there was a focus on soccer. But it's more about his affection toward this one team and rumors that are going about there. And, you know, his brother trying to figure out what he wants to do. He's interested in acting, but does he have the actual passion to try it? He doesn't know. And they're figuring things out. And they spent a lot of time in the movie just getting this family to grow on you. Despite their troubles, it is not a perfect marriage between his parents. They have some huge contention points that are dealt with in there. The mother is a prankster and likes to pull pranks on people and her family, and it's delightful to watch, and the movie really flies by. I think you should. If I haven't recommended any other foreign language films this year, but I will recommend this one. How about if you're only going to see one this year, recommend this one, because I didn't watch a lot of other ones, but this one was good. It's very good. Streaming on Netflix. I haven't seen the others, and I'll watch as nominations come out, but I would not be surprised if this is one that ends up winning a Oscar for best foreign language film. Don't be surprised at all. It's just that type of movie. And from what I'm hearing of other movies, I just don't know if there's another. We'll have to see what else is out there soon, right? But this is definitely gonna be a huge contender. So check it out. The Hand of God, streaming only on Netflix. And that's it. That's it for the this episode. So hope you enjoyed it. I'll do some more top 10 lists coming up soon for different things. Hope you enjoyed that list. Let me know again if you felt I missed one. If you think there's a film I should check out to reconsider for next year, I can update it. Let me know. Okay. And if anyone out there knows how to seize control back of their Facebook accounts, the pages, let me know so I can take it back from those who have stolen from me. But until next time. Oh, wait. I didn't give it a... I'm going to give The Hand of God a love it. Okay? I loved it. Until next time. Block and a half.
Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
Live long and prosper.